what was going through my head at that time. I do not know. I was drinking, just trying to take the pain away.
It's tough, man.
And Lingard! Absolutely fantastic. Jesse Lingard, it's to perfection.
Hey, that's football.
With a club like Man United, obviously it's so big. They can have that control over you. What? People have a voice.
Jesse, he asked if we could give him a couple of days off.
When things are getting said about you, that's not true. You're going to voice your opinion. I knew I needed to leave.
Do you have a suspicion why you weren't picked? You do, don't you? I can see it in your face.
So this is the whole thing, what happened.
Is there a day that you look back on and you go, that was the hardest day?
Jesse, you shit!
You're dead, bro!
Getting that much abuse and I'm already down enough and I've got to perform. I was still trying to be Jesse, like, hey, like, banter jokes and that, but of course it's going to affect me.
He's not done much at all this season.
I'm already going through things you don't know about. I felt like I had the world on my shoulders.
In 2019, your mother was admitted to hospital.
She couldn't really cope anymore.
Did you ever figure out what the root cause of your mother's depression was?
I think as soon as she had me, to be honest.
I wanted to start this episode in a slightly different way. When I looked at the community stats last week with myself and some of my team members, we were blown away that millions of you choose to follow us right here on this app. And that for me is insane. This is the most insane privilege I've ever had in my life, a privilege I never dreamed of having, to be able to sit here with these great people and have these conversations in the way that I love having them. In 2023, our plans are more scary, they're bigger than ever before. More of the same, but just finding ways that we can make the conversations even better, even deeper, even more wisdom-packed and actionable for everybody that listens to the show. And the way that you can continue to support us is simple. Just hit that follow button that's on this app right now. That is the number one way that you can help this show. Thank you so much for your continued support. Means a lot to me, and we'll continue to repay that support in every way that we can. Let's get on with it. Jesse, give me your context. Take me right back to when you were in those early years as you signed and joined Manchester United, I think at 7 years old. What was life like? If I'd been in your home, if I'd been in your surroundings, in your environment, what was life like?
Life was good. Obviously, mum and dad split up at an early age, especially when I was born, which can make things a lot difficult. But I still had the desire, the hunger to go in training. My granddad took me in training, you know, week in, week out. You know, I had trials at Everton, City, Liverpool. So my granddad was driving up and down the motorway constantly. You know, to support me and take me to training and games. And then obviously made a decision to sign for United at 9 years old. You know, we had a, you know, great team. You know, likes of Pogba, Ravel in the team. So we had a great team. And I think outside of that, obviously mum was very supportive, my dad was very supportive, you know, football mad. You know, so I think that support system, especially at an early age, is important.
Did everybody in your circle around you have high hopes for your career when you were that age, about 10, 12, 13? Did they think you were going to be a professional football player?
I think my granddad did.
Your granddad did?
Yeah. He was on the Ashes turf pretty much every day, practicing skills, learning new things. And he had the belief that I'd be a footballer. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, then, you know, I wouldn't be in the situation that I'm in, because he took time out of his day to take me on the turf, you know, practice. My brother would come down, my dad would come down. You know, we'd play one touch, two touch football, you know, pretty much on a regular basis. And that's my happy place. That's where I'm most happy, on a football pitch. And like I say, my granddad was, you know, very important, you know, putting me into Liverpool, into City, into United on trials, because, you know, people recognised, you know, their talent, but he was there to push me.
I was watching the documentary and I saw a granddad who looked... It's rare to see... I mean, one might expect a dad or a mother to be that pushy and direct and critical, but to see a granddad being that savage with you at times was quite surprising. Can you give me a for anybody that hasn't seen it? Can you give me a flavour of how tough he was at times?
Well, he got banned a couple of times. Like when I say we're 12 years old, we're playing Stoke away, and he's come on the pitch after the game and said, "You're not fit to wear the shirt."
Your granddad's a
yeah. bitchy. So you're not fit to wear the shirt. None of you are fit to wear the shirt. Blah blah. I'm thinking. Like, the coach is looking at me, I'm like, oh, I can't do nothing. He had me on weights at 10 years old, like lifting weights. Went into Man United and said to one of the coaches, Tony Whelan at the time, he said, like, you know, I'm going to get my grandson into, because obviously it was a power lifter for Great Britain.
Right.
So, you know, he wanted me on the weights at an early age to try and build a bit of muscle because, you know, I was always small. He kind of drove that from, you know, being a power lifter, you know, for Great Britain, kind of passed it down to me. Mum was a gymnast, so it was kind of tough on her as well. Mm-hmm. Mum took it the wrong way because obviously she wanted to be a gymnast, but my granddad was so hard on her that, you know, eventually she, you know, she quit on that. But even with me, you know, some games I'd, you know, not play the best and, you know, you get in the car on the way home and, you know, I'd say like, look, oh, my toe was sore today. Like, just trying to make excuses because he was so like, hard on me, but he was trying to push. Like, it come from a good place, you know what I'm saying?
So the reason why your mother quit gymnastics was because he was so hard on her?
Yeah, he was so tough on her. And obviously she didn't have really the motivation to carry on. Probably she weren't strong enough to carry on that. But, you know, for me, I always knew I wanted to be a footballer. So, you know, having, you know, my granddad, you know, my dad, my mum around me at the time, you know, trying to push me. And it was difficult even at earlier stages because, you know, I was living at my mum's a couple of days and my granddad's a couple of days, and he's only down the road, it's like literally 5 minutes. But, you know, like I say, my mum couldn't really cope with me at the time. You know, so I was back and forth from my nan and granddad's a lot. And then, like I say, you drive me up and down the motorway, Liverpool, straight back to Manchester. I would train at Liverpool for one day, have a game for United the next day. So, you know, he put the yardage in, you know, to get me where I wanted to be today.
You said though that your mother couldn't really cope with you at the time. What do you mean by that?
It's depression. She'd be in bed all day. Well, most days, you know, I'd go in, ask for money for the ice cream, like, still be in bed. So me, I was happy-go-lucky. Like, I'm bubbly, like, I wanted to go and play out, play football with my friends. And you don't understand, you know, the situation that, you know, your mother's in at the time. We're so young, so I didn't really understand what was going on until obviously it got brought to light, you know, maybe probably say about 16, 17. You can kind of understand like what she's going through and things like that. But she'll never talk about it. She'll always bottle it up.
So your mother was suffering from depression even when you were very, very young.
Yeah.
But at that time you just didn't realise what it was.
No, didn't know it was.
Did she know what it was?
I think she knew, yeah. But she would never, at the time we didn't have really a support system to support her. She didn't have really people around her that, you know, she could go to, like she can go to my PA now and, you know, go to the doctors and, you know, she will sort all that out. But at that time, obviously I think she knew what it was, but she couldn't really cope with it. She couldn't really, didn't know how to deal with certain things. And, you know, for me, I'm just a kid, so I want to play out, have fun, play football. But for her, she just wanted to go be in bed, like, all day. She could drop me off at school. Well, she could drop me off at school at 8 o'clock in the morning and then sleep until 3 o'clock until she picks me up. That's how bad it was. Like, she was really going through it.
So she'd sleep all night, wake up to drop you to school and then go back to bed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She'd sleep in the daytime, pick me up from school, probably go back to bed again, just lay in bed. Like, curtain shut, dark room, everything. And then, obviously, you know, bath me, whatever, before I go to bed. And then she'll sleep all night.
Over the last 10 years or so, people have become more aware of what, like, depression and mental health is. And this is kind of why I ask if your mother knew what it was, because, like, 10 years ago, if I'm being completely honest, there was a real stigma around mental health. It was kind of seen as someone just kind of being a bit crazy.
Yeah.
And over the last 10 years, thankfully, we've gotten to a point where we have a better understanding that we have physical and mental health. And this is why I say, like, did your mother know what it was? Did she just think she was just sad or she didn't have motivation? Or did she know she was depressed?
Yeah, I think it was probably the motivation part. Like, she couldn't get out of bed. She couldn't motivate herself to get out of bed. Even when they woke up, I was dying for her to be there. And I think she came for the quarterfinals. And that just made me so happy because in her situation, you know, not getting out of bed, not having the motivation, but she found that motivation to come and see her son play at the World Cup. That was, like, I told her, like, I was really proud of her. Like, it's brave what you did. Because, you know, every day in bed, depressed, no motivation, and just to find that little bit of motivation just to come and see, you know, her son at the World Cup. And don't forget, she's got, you know, I've got my little sister and little brother as well. So, you know, she's got to deal with them as well, which is always tough. But like I say, to find that motivation to come and see me at World Cup was important for me, especially because I wanted her there anyway, regardless. And I didn't even know she was coming until I was in the lineup singing National Anthem, I seen her.
You seen her when you seen, really?
And it just gave me goosebumps straight away. Like, I was so emotional after that. And I wanted to perform at the highest level and win the game just for her. And I think there's a video on my Instagram of me hugging her for like 2-3 minutes.
I've seen it.
And it's just some things that can make you happier, you know, as a person, but just to be there and get up and get changed and get dressed and have that motivation to see her son at a World Cup. That's what made me happy.
This is a bit of a difficult question because it's not always obvious, but did you ever figure out where or what the root cause of your mother's depression was?
Not really, no. I think as soon as she had me, to be honest, I think it was just difficult for her to handle having a child. Like I say, my nan and granddad, you know, took over most of the time, but you know, she was still there, she was still a mother, but it was just hard for her to deal with it. And you know, we had certain instances where, you know, we'd be in bed and she'd be like trying to stretch my legs and that. Like, I'm like, what's happening? I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know she had depression at the time. I was such a young age. But for her, it was just normal for her. And she's like, you know, stretching my legs, like, you got training tomorrow. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, I didn't realise what was going on. So she had them like phases where, you know, she'd do you know, some just extraordinary, you know, stuff.
Stretching your legs, I'm confused.
Yeah, it's like stretching my groins out, like before, like we went to sleep. Just like it was strange for me because I knew I'd train the next day, but for her that was probably natural and normal. Do you know what I mean? Like, it still don't resonate with me today. And probably doesn't resonate with her today of what was going through her head at the time, like, especially when I was born. Like, could she handle that situation of having a kid?
So you're saying basically before you would go to sleep, she was stretching your legs in a way that didn't make sense, like, as in...
Yeah, I was just like, I just want to go sleep. Like, why? Well, I would never question her. But she would just do, like, extraordinary stuff.
And this has lasted up until today, since as young as you can remember till today.
Yeah. And I think she'll still always have depression, but she can cope with it now, she can handle it, because like I said, we've got the right support system around. But still, it's like I say, I've got my little brother and sister who she looks after, and you know what, my mum's come on leaps and bounds, to be honest. Especially from, like, even a documentary. She was nervous to do that. Like, she was crying in the car. Like, the director spoke to her and said, you're going to be involved in it. She was crying, like, didn't know whether she'd cope with it. But, you know, she found the courage, found the motivation, you know, to do it. And that's still a big thing, even though she's going through what she's going through. But like I say, we can handle, you know, certain situations now.
Emotions. You said about bottling up your emotions. And generally, you know, I think men in particular have a real problem with kind of expressing their emotions for various reasons, because we're, you know, we're macho and masculine and whatever else. But Did you learn at a young age at all how to express your emotions? Did you have models in your life where people were emotionally expressive?
No. Only with my mum and my nan and granddad. Like, we'd always say, love you, like, how are you? You okay? But, like, dad's side, like, not much. Like, rarely hug, more of a, you know, fist pump. But, you know, sometimes you gotta see that loving side, especially from, you know, a father. And, you know, me becoming a father as well, that's all I wanna do with Hope. You know, tell her I love her, you know, express, you know, that emotion to her. So I mainly got it from, like, my mum's side, granddad, nan, mainly. Like I say, I think my dad's coming to a realisation where, you know, he's seen a documentary and, you know, his thought is, what's the point in, you know, it's a short life, what's the point in arguing all the time? Because my mum and dad had never seen eye to eye. So I can understand from my mum's perspective where, you know, she don't want to see him. But my dad's come to a realisation where it's like, look, let's get together, let's have a coffee, let's sit down. You know, documentary really, you know, woke him up and realised life's too short to, you know, because it'd be coming games and my mum, it'd be asking, like, is your mum in the box? Like, who's in the box? Like, who's in the box? And I'm like, my mum. But I'll sit in the stands and I know it shouldn't be like that, but, you know, that's how it is. But he wants that, you know, togetherness again, but I can never see my mum doing it. I can never see my mum giving him time of day, to be honest.
Has your mum been able to find a new partner since?
she picks not the best people, to be honest. She picks a lot of narcissists, but she kind of thrives off that for some reason, like the bad boys and, you know, the situation that we're in. You know, you can't be going out with these guys and doing what you're doing with these guys because, you know, it comes back to me. They've had a lot of drama with most of them, to be honest. The last guy hung himself. Which was, it was deep. But it, you know what narcissists are like. Like, 1 minute, he'd be giving her the world. And then next, he'd be like, who you with? Like, who you texting? Blah, blah. And I'm like, mum, these guys are not good for you, man. Like, they're not good for you. But somehow she thrives off them situations and gets a buzz off it and becomes happy. So I was in a situation where it's like, do I want mum to be happy and being with these guys, or, you know, bring her back down to earth? So it's a difficult situation, but like I say, yeah, the guy, you know, hung himself in the end. And then I think after that, my mum realised, you know, she can't be, you know, dating these people.
It's difficult, isn't it? I completely relate to, well, I can completely understand. Not that I've had that lived experience, but I can understand what you're saying with this conflict of, I want her to be with someone, but if it's a bad option, would I rather her just be alone? And then, you know, I was thinking as you're saying that about many of my friends who've been going through difficult situations with their mental health and what ends up happening, because there might be a gap somewhere or something missing or something not quite stable with you, you end up attracting someone like a mirror who is also a little bit unstable, yeah, who isn't in the best place, and you kind of are toxic together in a way. And often I think with some of my friends, it's like you just need to work on yourself first before you you try and find someone who, you know, because a lot of the time we end up trying to look for someone that will fix us, which is never a good thing.
I think that's what she did. She wanted someone to, because, you know, she's got friends, but she don't go out with her friends and, you know, be social. So I feel like her having, you know, someone there, you know, she could go to his house, she could do things with him, she could be happy. But on the other side, it's like, they're not good for you though. Like, they kind of bring you down in a way.
Manipulators and
manipulating. Yeah. And
they're well aware of your weaknesses.
She believe it. We'd go somewhere like me, my mum, Daisy, and maybe Travis or something like that. And the guy would be texting like, "Where are you? Like, what are you doing? Who are you with? Like, what's with the family? No, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not." And it's like, and me, I don't know. My mum's like dealing with this, and I'm like, "How can you deal with that?" I'm thinking, "How can you deal with this?" I'm like, "Just block him." But she just like, she loves the attention. She loves it.
Narcissists target people like that, that they can control in such a way, be coercive and manipulate and sort of take advantage of their self-esteem and stuff. That's what narcissists do. Because an individual like that, a narcissist like that, would never be successful in coercion and manipulation of someone who would go, "What the fuck are you texting me when I'm with my phone? The fuck do you think you are?"
Exactly, that's what I was saying.
They wouldn't survive there. No. So they find their way to people who they can...
Easy targets.
Yeah, exactly.
Mum's easy target.
And it's difficult.
She'll never back down. If I say like, "Look, leave him." She's like, yeah, I'll block him. But she'll unblock him the next day.
It's tough, man.
It's difficult. It's hard.
It's difficult. Love's a difficult thing. Off you go into Manchester United. When did you get, in your view, your first real break in Manchester?
Probably when Jose come in.
Really?
Yeah.
Not under SAF, Sir Alex Ferguson.
Sir Alex said I'll make it when I'm 23. When I'm 23, 24. So, you know, I always believed in him, he always believed in me. I think when David Moyes come in, I weren't ready to play first team football yet. And then I think, especially under Van Gaal, you know, it gave me the confidence to play. But still, it was difficult because, you know, I was at a stage where I played the first game under Van Gaal, did my knee, 6 months out. January came, went on loan to Derby, and then the season after, that's when it was like kind of make or break. So I left it till October time. And if I weren't playing then I knew I needed to leave. And then he played me at CSK Moscow away, Champions League. Like, starting. I was like, "What? Okay." Freezing, cold, -5, whatever it was. Rooney was like, "Don't wear gloves." I was like, "What?" He's like, "Don't wear gloves." I was like, "Okay." Didn't wear gloves, played well. And after that, stayed in the team. So it's kind of a make or break time for me.
Why is that comment, "Don't wear gloves," significant to you?
Because, you know, especially at United, we're brought up, got to wear black boots, no gloves, no long bottoms in training. Just like the basic things, we're brought up with that. So when you go into the first team, of course in the warm up, you know, I'm going to wear gloves. But for the game, you know, back to basics, how we grew up, don't wear gloves in the game.
It's about values, right?
It's just values. You know, it's morals. It's just the way you've been brought up. You know, United put that into us at an early age.
A lot of that comes from Sir Alex Ferguson, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm super, you know, I've sat here with a bunch of ex-Sir Alex Ferguson players, Rio, Gary, Patrice. How would you describe the culture at Manchester United during that Sir Alex Ferguson period? What was the culture like?
It was good.
Yeah.
Always banter. Rio, Scholesy, Giggsy. You know, always banter. Even on tour. You know, it's good to go on tour with him. And, you know, I think, you know, Rio being Rio, always was there for advice. Always there to speak to. You know, on a regular basis. Like most of them, Scholesy the same.
Were they honest and critical as well, though? Were they tough? Some of those senior lads.
Yeah, because they're winners. And, you know, they've been there and done that. And, you know, they won trophies before. And, you know, it was unfortunate that I weren't in, you know, any of the teams that, you know, won the Prem or Champions League. But, you know, even on tour, it was, you know, you still win games. And, you know, going on tour with them, especially with, you know, Sir Alex, was, you know, an amazing feeling. I remember being on the bench, me and Pogba got called up to be on the bench against Newcastle. you know, not knowing if I'm gonna play or not, but still just to be there and see how, you know, they are in the changing room and, you know, see that winning mentality. And I think being at United is all, you know, it's been instilled in you from a young age that, you know, winning's important. Don't matter how you win, just win. And I think they've been so successful, you know, over the years, you know, winning trophies just by having that winning mentality.
Sir Alex Ferguson leaves. Now, it's funny because I'm a Manchester United fan. I'm a big fan and I've had season tickets over the years and go to most of the games at home still today. And from what I've heard, it went from being like a family to being run by Ed Woodward and it feeling less like a family. Like one of the comments one of the waitresses said to me was, you know, when Sir Alex Ferguson and David Gill were here, they would come in here and like chat to us and they knew all of our names, every single one of our names. Mm-hmm. And then when Sir Alex Ferguson left, one of them said to me, they don't speak to us anymore.
It's different. Sir Alex was like man to man. Like when we're training with the first team, he'd bring us like 16, 17 training with the first team. Like he'd give you that confidence, know your names, know all, like from probably under 10s to the first team, know everyone's name. He'd take his time out to understand you as a person, understand your family. And like I say, you know, things change. You know, but with him, you know, it was good that, you know, he could understand the family side, get to know your family a bit more, you know, understand you as a person, you know, see your progression. Like I say, you said 23, 24, you'd be in the first team. You know, to hear that, you know, you can kind of get a big ego, but, you know, for me, it was, nothing's guaranteed anyway. So I'm just going to work my ass off 10 times, you know, more, you know, to be in that first team.
Rio said to me that when his granddad was ill, Sir Alex Ferguson not only knew, but he knew what Rio's granddad's favourite whiskey was, flowers were, and he sent it to the hospital bed before anybody else. He got it there. So Rio said to me, whenever I've asked the senior players why Saf was so good, they all said, they would all just, before you even get the words out, they'd say, man management. That's what you said there man as management. Well.
And I think even this day and age now, I feel like it's important, even with Josie used to FaceTime me. Like randomly, a couple of times I'll be driving and be FaceTiming me. I'm like, where are you, kid? I'm just driving home from Selfridges. Where's Marcus? I don't know. I think he's at home. Okay, enjoy. Just little things like that, little calls here and there. Even, you know, Steve Cooper not going to ring me. Just have conversations, wanting to understand you a little bit more. I feel like it's so important.
Why?
Because it shows that they care. It shows.
And when they care, you care back.
Right? Yeah. Like,
that's how care works.
Yeah. Like, I want to understand you a little bit more than, you know, as a person, not just as a manager, as a person, like, how you operate. Not in football. Like, I want to know you outside of football as well. Same with the lads. Like, I want to know you outside of football. I want to get to know your families. And I think where I learned that from was England with Gareth Southgate. Man management, top. Got to the 2018 World Cup, got to the rooms. See a picture of me and my mum. See a picture of me and Marcus. Like, it's like we're home. So
when you got to your room at camp?
Yeah, in the hotel. Like, I felt like it was at home.
He really has got the best out of England. In my lifetime, in the 30-odd years that I've lived, I've never seen an England side that looks so happy and cohesive and honestly ego-free.
Mm-hmm.
And it's showing in the tournaments we're playing. We have hope. Like I was out in Qatar and I was in the stadium for the England-France game. Yeah. And even though we lost, I walked away happy because mm-hmm. we're playing great and we're challenging. What's he done in your view? To that England side to create that atmosphere and that culture?
I just think he understands, you know, us as players. I think when he first came in, he was the first person to give me a debut for England. I played with him at under 21s, you know, understood his values and the way he did things. And then, you know, coming into, you know, the senior team, you know, giving him a debut.
What are his values, in your view?
I mean, he cares about the players a lot. And like I say, he wants to understand, you know, the player. You know, so for me, you know, being with him on a 21 level and obviously being with him at a senior team, you know, there's trust already there anyway. But, you know, it takes a lot to trust a person. And, you know, for someone new coming into the team, you know, he still understands the person. And like I say, he wants that trust and the trust back. And, you know, you can speak to him about anything. Not just football, you can speak to him about anything. And, you know, he'll understand and I'll ask about, how's your mum? How's your dad? How's everyone? Just little things go a long way. And I think, you know, the man management side of it is very important, especially tournaments anyway. But, you know, the group as a collective, you know, understand his values and the way he does things. You know, so people new come into the camp, you know, it's easy settling straight away because he'll pull you straight away and like speak to you and sit you down and, you know, talk, just talk. And that's it. And I think it's so important.
What's his, you know, a lot of managers are known for, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson's, one of the trademarks of his style is the hairdryer. I know that's kind of like overgassed by the media and stuff because you hear what a caring man he was. But when you think about Southgate's style compared to these other managers you've had like Van Gaal and Mourinho and all and Moyes, etc. What's his style, Southgate's?
It's different, but he's still got the hairdryer in and all.
Really?
Yeah.
Surprises me.
Yeah, no, it surprises a lot of people. But you need that though because you don't want a manager who's, you know, nice and lets you, you know, get away with little things here and there. Like, he's on it. Like, he'll tell you if you're in the wrong or not. You know, it don't matter what player you are, who you are, he'll tell you if you're in the wrong or not. But, you know, on the other hand, he still wants to create that good vibe, you know, with the team. And, you know, he'll shout when, you know, it's needed. But most of the time, it's just, you know, simple. You can speak to him, you know, speak to the group, you know, simple words, you know, enjoy the game. We've been here before. Go out, win the game, you know, have fun, do the tactics all in the week. But, you know, to have someone like that, you know, who's a good guy as well, I think, you know, it goes a long way, especially, you know, with the England team.
Quick one, as some of you know, Intel are sponsoring this podcast, and for me, Intel has made the search for a premium laptop so much easier by creating the Intel Evo platform, which is signified by this sticker here in the corner. Laptop designs only receive the Intel Evo badge when they have been tested to pass Intel's own very strict requirements so that they can actually perform as you need them to out in the real world. And the result for me is a premium laptop that can perform everywhere, even with my crazy schedule in mind. And most importantly, it can handle multiple tabs open and a battery that really lasts throughout the entirety of my meetings. Whatever you need your laptop for, Intel Evo have you covered. It's a game changer. To find out more and to get your hands on an Intel Evo laptop, go to intel.co.uk/evo and let me know how you get on. It is that time of year again where my life becomes incredibly reliant on Huel. I'm busier than ever. I'm trying to be nutritionally complete in all that I do. I'm trying to make sure I get all of the vitamins and minerals that I need in my diet. And Huel has been, for the last 3.5 years, the primary reason as it relates to my diet that I've been able to be nutritionally complete while also being incredibly productive. They've also been a sponsor of this podcast since we launched the podcast. And so I owe them a huge debt of gratitude for enabling this show. And in fact, when we hit the 1,000,000 milestone on YouTube with this podcast, I sent it to the founder because I've never shared this before, but he actually said to me when I started the podcast, he was like, you're going to absolutely kill it. You'll have millions of subscribers. You'll be this big. You'll be that big. So many people will listen. And I don't know if I believed it, if I'm being completely honest, but he believed in us and this show before we'd released one episode, which is a remarkable thing. And he gave me a huge amount of self-belief in myself. So thank you, Julian Hearn, for that. But also thank you, Huel, for creating a product that has helped me and helped my health stay intact in my busiest days over the last couple of years. Back to the episode. Why did Manchester United not reach the levels on the pitch during that era? Because when I look at the players that we had, I mean, fucking hell, we signed some unbelievable players. Like, it's not, people often criticise the Glazers for lots of reasons, but when you think about the money spent on players on the pitch, we spent the money.
Yeah.
It's like almost a billion, I think it's almost a billion,
yeah.
Billion we spent in players in that period. Yet we couldn't We couldn't seem to win. We couldn't seem to get that cohesion right through that sort of Van Gaal, Mourinho era, and even the David Moyes era.
Mm-hmm.
What's your assessment on why that is? Like, what? Why wasn't it?
I just think it didn't click. Of course we won. You know, with Van Gaal, won the FA Cup. Mourinho, Europa League, Carabao Cup.
But these world-class players are coming to United, and I'll be honest, they're looking average. So they would come from a club where they were banging, and me and my friends, we celebrate in our Manchester United chat, we're like, here we go, lads, mm-hmm. every year. And then it's like they've become half the player.
It's strange because a lot of players have come in and failed. Like I say, you know, Alexis in training, top. Like this
Sanchez,
kid,
yeah.
Alexis, quality, training quality. Then it comes to a game, it's didn't click for some reason. Don't know. Is it pressure? You know, when I was playing, especially with Rom and, you know, Alexis, we just wanted to enjoy football. And of course, it's going to be hard to win a Prem when City have, you know, been so dominant for many years. But even to win Europa League, you know, Carabao Cup, Community Shield, like, we're winning trophies. But I think when Jose left, then trophy stopped. It's difficult. Another new manager. It's kind of like you have to like kind of prove yourself over and over again. It's kind of like, you know, false, like fake promises, really.
Like, I think that's what the heart of it.
Yeah, like, you know, you get like, you're doing well, like, you know, you're playing next game. Don't end up playing.
During the time under Solskjaer?
Yeah, because I played at first and then obviously lockdown
box
came.
Box office, when all first came in, United were unbelievable. Yeah. You were balling out of control.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then I said to him before the season, you know, if I don't play X amount of games before December, then we let me go on loan in January. He said, yeah. So, didn't play. And then January come, West Ham came in. And still people was, you know, debating, you know, is he fit enough? Is he ready to go into a team like that and start straight away.
That nearly didn't happen, did it? It was off and on and off and on.
Honestly, I was literally with my brother watching Sky Sports News. Dave Moyes on the phone. I'm like, yeah, I'm coming. Like, I'm there. Like, you want me there? I'm there. Edward rings. No, you're not going there. It's off. It's done. Just crying. I was crying. Me and brother just crying. All I want to do is play football. That's like, Edward was, right, it's back on now. All I want to do is play football. Let me just go and play football, please. As soon as I got there, hit the ground running. It's probably one of my best seasons, to be honest. Like, I think 9 goals, 5 assists in from like February to May. I still didn't go Euros after that. And that was my main aim, to go Euros.
How did that feel when you found out that you weren't going after having won it? Probably, arguably your best ever year in football,
mm-hmm.
before at West Ham, when you were, you know, widely considered to be the most informed player in the league. How did it feel?
It's heartbroken because, you know, growing up, I was what I do, represent my country and play for England. And to not play the first half of the season, then to go to West Ham, and the form I was in there, I could have easily took it into the Euros, but didn't pick me. And like I say, weren't strong enough to probably say, look, why am I not picked?
Would that have helped?
Probably, yeah.
Do you think?
To get a reason out of it, yeah.
It wouldn't have got you in the team, but it would have helped you.
Yeah, like, what could I have done to get into the team?
Yeah.
Should I score 10, 11, 12 goals? I don't know.
Do you have a suspicion why you weren't picked? You do, don't you? I can see it in your face.
I don't know because...
I can see that smirk. You do.
I don't know because... I'm just thinking off form, how can I not be picked?
Do you think it could be something else? Because your form, you can't argue with it.
Can't argue with form. You can't argue with stats. Stats don't lie.
Off the pitch?
Off the pitch, I was sweet. I was in a good mental space.
So I don't know what it could have been then.
This is what I'm saying. Who knows? And maybe one day we'll probably get you know, the reason. But to this day, not sure why.
In 2019, as shown in the documentary, your mother was admitted to hospital. What was the cause of that happening? What was the lead up of events that sent her to hospital?
Just the depression. It was just so bad that she couldn't really cope anymore, and I think she needed to go away and get help. But then leaving me with my little sister, who was probably 11 at the time, and, you know, my little brother, who's probably like 15 at the time. For me, I was still going through my own things as well. So I weren't really the big bro that they wanted at the time. Because they always get like the fun, the laughy Jesse, the bubbly Jesse. But at that time, I was going through my own stuff anyway. So I was just autopilot.
Your mum's in hospital. You've got two younger siblings that you're now primary carer of. And how are things going on the pitch? You're saying that you just weren't present on the pitch.
Just weren't there. Like, mentally, weren't there. Like, I'd be on the pitch, but just didn't want to be on the pitch.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't want to play. I didn't want to quit football. I'd never quit football, but I would have needed a break. If lockdown didn't come, I wouldn't need a break, 100%.
And is this is in Ole's first year or second year?
Yeah, so it's second year, and I'm just going into games like just mind blank, just on the pitch. Just like, I didn't want to be there, but so of course I'm gonna play bad.
And then you get an abuse.
That was kind of what tipped it over, to be honest. After the derby game.
What happened?
So we won. But, you know, as soon as we get on the bus, it's, no, Jesse, you're shit. Blah, blah, like, why are you playing for us? Blah, blah. And to be fair, Luke Shaw backed it, to be honest. He came down off the bus and like started shouting at him, arguing, whatever. But don't know if it was derby fans or United fans, but like, I'm human, you know what I mean? Of course it's going to affect me. Like, I'm already down enough anyway. I'm already going through things what you don't know about. And I've got to perform on a weekly basis. And when you're performing, you're not performing at 100%. So, of course, there's going to be critics and, you know, you're not playing that well. You know, but to be abused like that, it's kind of what tipped it, to be fair. That was like, I was like, nah, I can't be arse anymore. Like, I need a break. I need to find something, some motivation, some fire in my belly again to get going again, because, you know, I can't be doing this. Like, and there'll be another game next week and I'll be like, oh, like, can't be arse, man. I don't want to play. Just during that time period of everything what was going on, mum looking after my little brother and sister and that, I felt like I had the world on my shoulders.
There's this really kind of like moving, haunting part in the documentary where I think your older brother has videoed you lying on the sofa completely still. Your eyes are like blank.
Mm-hmm. That's how it was. Like, even at training, like just masking it.
Masking what?
Just masking, you know, the depression side of things, the anxiety. Like, I was still trying to be Jesse, like, hey, like, banter jokes and that, but you know, it comes to a point where you actually need to say something, because I felt like just the world just was on my shoulders and had no one to turn to. Like, couldn't speak to anyone about anything. I didn't want to speak to anyone. I thought, you know what, I can deal with this. I can handle this. I'm grown enough to deal with this. But come to a point where it was like, look, Ollie, this is what's going on. And we kind of kept it, you know, close-knit, to be honest. But even just to have, like, Ollie say, like, you know, how's your mum? How's she doing? Like, I could have a conversation with him. I could have a conversation with a doc. I could have a conversation with a liaison woman. And that just helped a little bit more. Just having that little conversation and letting people understand, like, what I'm going through. And then I think I did a piece for the paper, you know, talking about it. And I still don't think people really fully understood, you know, what was going on until like I said, the documentary came out.
In order for you to be able to have those conversations with the people, you first had to make the decision to, like, for you to talk about how you're feeling, because once you open up, then they can give you that support. You talked about how it's difficult to do that when you're a young man. Did you realize in that moment that you were suffering with depression? Could you see yourself in your mother?
Yeah, probably. I think the video sums it up, the one where I'm on the sofa. I'm just lay there for like 3 minutes, just staring to thin air. I don't know what I was thinking, don't know what was going through my head at the time. But like I say, like I was drinking, stuff like that, like before bed, like having nightcap. I'm like, I look back now, I think, like, what am I doing that for? Like, what, I needed something, just trying to take the pain away and like put me at ease somehow and like try and forget what was going on. But it makes 10 times worse.
Do you feel the online criticism? Are you exposed to it?
No, don't read it.
You don't read it?
No.
Have you ever gone on Twitter and looked at what people are saying?
No. I think that's the worst thing anyone can do.
Some players must do that though, right?
I think players do it, yeah. But I don't know why. Because, see, I'm strong enough to handle it now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm strong enough to handle negative comments, criticism, whatever. Concentrate on football.
But there's no point going and searching for it, point, you know, in a sewer.
Yeah, there's no point. Why search for it?
Because I'm thinking about, like, you know, we talked a lot recently about players like Harry Maguire being on the receiving end of a lot of criticism and stick. In my view, most of it's completely unjust. But I've always wondered if players actually feel that criticism and it impacts their game.
Yeah, I think so.
Can you see that when you're in the dressing room? If you know a player's like been slammed in the press or online or whatever, can you see them drop, like their head drop a little bit? And then
yeah, they probably try and mask it a little bit.
Yeah.
Just to like be strong, like I can handle it. But some, like, we are human. Of course, criticism is going to affect us, especially when, you know, the pundits are saying it, and it's, especially them, you know, with the pundits saying it more than, you know, a comment on Instagram or stuff like that on social, or any social media, because it gets highlighted more, you know, in the press with, you know, a pundit saying it. So, of course, you're going to see it or someone's going to send it to you. But then it's kind of masking it, trying to be strong. And then you got to go and perform. But I think the majority of players, you know, in this day and age are strong enough to handle what anyone says anymore.
You did perform when you went to West Ham. You really, really performed, as we've discussed. I think a lot of people were expecting you to stay there because you performed so well. And it just seemed like you finally found your groove, consistent. You scored the goals, you got the assists. What was your thinking at that point when that loan comes to an end? Did you want to stay at West Ham?
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to stay?
Yeah.
Manchester United wanted you to come back.
Yeah. So I had a year. Yeah. I went into my final year after that then.
Mm-hmm.
And I still wanted to go on. I wanted to go on loan in Jan. So I weren't playing again. So Newcastle was on the cards in Jan. Deal was done, everything. Obviously, the United squad weren't big enough. So let a couple of players go out on loan. And then when it comes to me, John Murta rang, he was like, nah, like, you're not going on loan. I was like, well, he's gone on loan. He's got, let me go and enjoy. I'm not playing there, so let me go on loan. Like, let me play football.
To Newcastle?
Yeah. And he's like, what do you want, days off? I was like, no, that's what I'm going to play football. Like,
what do you want, days off?
Yeah, so this is the whole thing, what happened. So then they stopped the loan. Obviously, I was pissed. And then when he said about the days off and that, I messaged him. I was like, you know what? I'm going to take 2 days off now. Just because you said that. So then they put out, Jesse's asked for 2 days off in the media. What? Went on Twitter straight away. No, I didn't ask for 2 days off. He asked me they want days. I just put it out there. The facts.
How what was the dressing room like at that point? You know, because a lot of players were, obviously when Ronaldo comes in, obviously Ole eventually ends up getting fired, et cetera, et cetera. It did feel like, you know, they use this phrase, oh, the manager's lost the dressing room. Or there's, from a fan looking in, you could just see that there was something wrong with the culture at the club.
Mm.
Players were coming there that were world-class, as we said earlier, world-class elsewhere, come in, they were becoming fucking average players.
Yeah.
You've got all of these rumours leaking. You've got all of this stuff happening. Players at the club feeling like their trust has been broken. Like you said, you've been lied to a few times.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like someone didn't have control of the place.
No, it weren't. There's no control, I don't think. Like you say, when Sir Alex was there, it was full control.
It's like a fortress, yeah.
A fortress. Everything goes through him. Contracts, everything, like commercials, like everything. Of course, generations change. Players grow up. People have a voice. But like you say, when things are getting said about you, that's not true. You're going to voice your opinion. Like I say, it wouldn't happen back in the day. It'd be squashed there and then with Sir Alex. But like you say, now, people have got platforms to voice their own opinion and write what they want.
Do you think players have lost respect? Not in this sort of Erik ten Hag era, but just in that period that followed through these managers and the Solskjaer era. Do you think players, from what you'd seen, had kind of lost respect for the club?
Probably, yeah.
It looked like that.
Yeah, probably.
It looked like this wasn't the same.
Yeah. There's no control.
You're in control, right.
There's no structure. There's no balance. People doing what they want, pretty much, on it. It's like a free-for-all.
Free-for-all?
Yeah, it's just a free-for-all. I mean, like you say, people saying something like, that's never happened, ever, at United. And people are saying stuff on Twitter, and I think it happened with Paul and that as well. Like, he got a lot of scrutiny. Like, guy's one of the best midfielders in the world. Like, I've known him since, like, 16. Like, kid's got talent, man. Like, he's one of the best midfielders in the world. And still, he can't perform at United. So there's something wrong in some way. If you got one of the best midfielders in the world who can't perform, and then during the season when you have international break and he goes to France, and you see how he plays for France, it's like,
yeah,
guy's sick. And you come back like, same Alexis and that, I told you. Don't know what it is, I don't know. I can't say what it is. I don't know what it is. I enjoyed my time under Jose there. Like I'd want one of my best seasons under Jose there.
I was gonna say that of all these managers, Van Gaal, you know, Mourinho, all in Moyes in the post Sir Alex Ferguson era. When did it most feel like there was control and that United was starting to be more like United?
Probably Van Gaal, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. He had a structure. Like everyone understood what he wanted. Like some people didn't like. I love Van Gaal. Very tactical, knew I wanted to play, and everyone bought into that. And then, of course, Jose, best manager in the world, just wants to win. But like you say, had that man management as well, and had the belief in me, and the trust in me to perform. Like I say, I had one of my best seasons under Jose, that's how I went to the World Cup.
If you could wave a wand then, if I give you a wand, then I said, okay, in that all era, in that post-Alex Ferguson era, do one thing to fix the club's issues. What would you have done? What would that one wish have been?
Do you know what it is? I think they're so behind on, like, with everything. Like, you see, like, City's facilities, you see Tottenham's facilities when we go there, like, with England and that, when we train at Tottenham. Like people are miles ahead. Even, like the social side of things and that. I went to him like 2017 about like YouTube and let's do like content. Like they're so behind on everything. Like I just want them to just get up to date on like the new things that are happening, like the things that are popping.
Why does that matter?
You got to be relevant. You got to stay relevant.
But in terms of like the training ground, obviously Ronaldo in the Piers Morgan interview talks about the jacuzzi the chefs and the food and the facilities and the weights, training equipment.
And gym. He left years ago.
Yeah, he says he came back and it was all the same.
Yeah.
What impact does that have on you as a player?
You want the best things. You want, especially being like, United's one of the biggest clubs in the world. So, you know, you want the best for the best. And, you know, of course, you want the best food and, you know, you want the swimming pool and the jacuzzi and the sauna, which is, it's still there. But, you know, just like, be a bit more modern, like, modernize because, like, you see, like, you know, City's facilities and that, and like, you think, like, man, like, just, like, get up to date, like, catch up a little bit, like, because Like, you're way behind at the moment.
Is it a symbolic thing? Like, as in, it's kind of a symbol that you're not keeping up with the other clubs. You're not investing in the small stuff.
Mm.
Which, as a player, you go, well, we're also behind on the pitch, and we're just behind.
Just behind in general, because, like, back in the day, we used to have, like, table tennis table and, like pool and everything. So, like, keep you, like, mentally, you know, happy, and, you know, we had a dartboard and stuff like that, but not anymore. Like, there's, like, no games room or nothing. And, like, you just go in, you train, and you go home. Sometimes you gotta, like, stay at the training ground sometimes. You know, play darts with the lads and, you know, play table tennis with the boys and that. But this is like I say, just need to catch up a little bit more and become a little bit more modern. Of course, they changed like the canteen and that, but you know, to be relevant and stay in this day and age, you know, you got to be a little bit more modern.
Is that because of the ownership? Is that the people at the top of the club just don't understand what's important for the players? Because they spent their money on players. But to hear that they didn't spend the money on things behind the scenes kind of speaks to the fact that, I don't know, because Sir Alex Ferguson probably could have called the shots back in the day and said, we need this, we need this, we need this, we need this. Whereas these days, the last decade, who's calling the shots?
We don't know. Like, don't know what's going on. And of course, now they want to sell the club. But the fans have been wanting them out for, you know, a long time. But
did the players care? Did the players take a view, do you think?
Not really. It was just, like I say, just behind. We're just behind on a lot of things. And like you say, you want the modern things. You want the things that are, you know, popping off at that time. But I don't know, like, who called the shots about, you know, changing the training ground or and things like that. But like I say, just to catch up a little bit and you see what City are doing on that. Like you say, fresh training ground, best facilities, no one talking back in the press about the team.
You chose after your time at Old Trafford, after your contract had come to an end, to go to Nottingham Forest. A lot of people were surprised by that. A lot of people would have thought you would have gone back to West Ham, where you'd had an unbelievable run, or even to Newcastle or somewhere like that. Why did you choose Nottingham Forest? Newly promoted team. They've just been promoted, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why Forest?
I think they showed the love. They showed, you know, the willingness and the hunger to want me. They was going to fly me here, there and everywhere to get a deal over the line. Things broke down at West Ham. Negotiations. Which obviously I can't get into too much, but you know, Nottingham showed the love a lot more than, you know, West Ham. And, you know, when you think about it, you know, I've been at West Ham anyway before, and you expect, like, you see what I can do, I see what I've done. So you expect them to be like, yeah, like, you know what, like, we'll show you the love, like, this is a contract, blah, blah, like, let's negotiate, let's talk. And they weren't like that for some reason.
They didn't want you to sign?
No, they wanted me to sign.
They just wouldn't give you a good deal.
Kind of rush it. It was like kind of rushed. Like, it would be like Wednesday and they'd be like, sign by Friday. Like, this is the deal. Sign up. Like, let's talk. Like, you know me.
Like, I'm not. Some respect.
Yeah, like, just show a little bit of respect. Like, I've been there. Like, I've helped your team. Like, we've got to Europa League. I show like, a bit more respect on that. But Nottingham were just like, listen, like, we love you. We want you. Like, the manager will come to your house. Like, the owner wants to fly you to Greece, like, to sign the deal, like, doing everything in the power to get the deal over the line. And, you know, for me, it was a new challenge, different challenge. New promoted team. Of course, I've known, always known as United all my life. And I remember leaving United the last day. And the physio that we had from under 18s, obviously, is with the first team now. He's like, I remember the FA Cup goal, I remember the Youth Cup, you know, run when you won the Youth Cup. Like, I'll always remember that goal, like the FA Cup goal. So I got in my car, yeah. Just started crying. Just just started bawling, crying, like all the way home, drove home. Yeah, I rang my brother. I was like, it's actually leaving, you know, I'm leaving, leaving, crying all the way home and that. Like, I couldn't contain my emotions and that. And then, like, it lasted a long time. Like, I've been there all my life. Like, I know everyone in the club, from like staff, kit men, dinner ladies, you know, Mike Glennie, who scouted me, you know, to United. And like, that's been my life, United.
How did you feel about the club when you left it? Did you feel let down, like disappointed?
Yeah, a little bit. They say false promises here and there. Not really give you a reason why, you know, you weren't playing. So, yeah, kind of let down, to be honest. Like I say, didn't really get a send off. Been there that long. I think I deserve one.
But when you get in that car, or you, when I've been in the moment as well, where I've like, I've, you know, quit my business that I'd started 7 years in, when there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of employees. And my first reaction, I've got to be honest, was like, I was like, when I knew I was going to quit, I was so mad. And I wrote this email and it was kind of bitter and whatever else. But when I realized I was actually going to send this email, there was this little pause. And this is when I was in Portugal at the time, and I got really emotional.
Yeah.
Because that's when you look back and go, I'm actually going here.
Yeah, like, it hits you.
It hits you, yeah. It's all said and done now.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving. And so I redid the email, and it was like a really nice one. It was like a thank you to like the board and stuff for taking the chance on me and stuff. So yeah, it's tough though, because...
That was tough. When the physio said that, I was gone, crying all the way home in the car. And people don't know that. Like, people probably thought like, oh yeah, he's happy to leave, but I needed to leave. Like, I wasn't playing, so why am I gonna, like, I got offered a contract, but what's the point? I'm not gonna play, so I wouldn't rather, like, yeah, biggest club in the world, but happiness is more important for me, and I needed to be happy and go somewhere where I'm loved. And
it's been a difficult start to the season for Nottingham on the pitch. As we sit here now, I believe they're in the relegation zone.
Mm-hmm.
In the table. What's your view on the start of the year for Nottingham?
I think it's always going to be tough, especially with new players coming in. I think 22, 23.
Yeah, that. Crazy.
So it's always going to be tough, but I feel like, especially the Tottenham game, the Palace game, you know, we started getting a bit more momentum. Everyone knows, you know, the roles and responsibilities now. We play with each other. You know, a lot more, and you know, we understand each other a lot more. So I felt like, you know, the connection was there, especially Tottenham and the Palace game. And then obviously now we've had a break, but I think the break can do us good to regroup and, you know, really, you know, reevaluate and, you know, see what the main aim is for the season. And, you know, of course we don't want to be in relegation zone, so, you know, we won't be winning games, and away we need to do a lot better, because you know, we're struggling away from home at the moment. But you know, the home games can be really crucial and key, because the atmosphere is nothing I've never heard it like before. I've never been in an atmosphere like that for the game. Like, it's a joke. I get goosebumps every time. And I feel like we need to really, I think, just dig deep. I think everyone knows what the situation we're in anyway. And just about, you know, maintaining, keep working hard. Of course, the attackers have got to score, and you know, we've got to do our job. You know, it's different for me, because, you know, I've been playing at United, and you know, of course we have all the ball, and you know, we're getting shots and chances and that. Of course it's going to be difficult at Nottingham, where you know, you might not see the ball as much, and you're not getting as many shots, and you're not creating as many chances. But you know, I thrive off these moments and these challenges. It's a new challenge, and you know, I'm happy to be there. You know, I love training, love playing in the games, and that's the most important. It's just to be happy for me.
Off the pitch, you know, you're 29 now. Players, I think the average age of a player usually goes, I don't know, 32-ish, I don't know. What are you thinking about off the pitch? What's going on in your world? I know you've got your brand, you're doing several investments and sort of deals, you've got a media company. Give me a view of what that looks like.
So even at United, I've always, you know, off the pitch, I'm always on the go. Always want to know what the next thing is to do. What's the next investment? what can I be involved in? What can I do? Esports comes, gaming, love gaming. Esports team, let's do an esports team. Brand, love fashion, let's do a brand. Like the launch for the brand was amazing. I think 3,000 people turned up, Victoria Warehouse. And then at the night time, Lil Baby was there, we got Lil Baby to perform. And he went even big then. But I just want to be happy and do things that I want to do to make me happy. And, you know, the investment and the business side of things. Of course, I want to set up things for my little sister, for my little brother, for my daughter when she grows up, that they can just go into straight away. And I think with the media company, it's called One Touch. Guess why it's called One Touch?
Because you play One Touch with your granddad?
Mm-hmm. So I named it One Touch. And obviously the Channel 4 documentary came from that. And I feel like it's just easier because if I do a commercial now, say I do JBL commercial, and they're getting the production, and I can be like, well, you can use my production then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the talent can get paid, and my productions you can get paid at the same time. So it's a win-win. And all the anything that we do, that we video or record, we get final say-so anyway. So it's all under our umbrella. And like I say, after football, I want to go into acting. So maybe starting this now and maybe start doing a little bit of voiceover work and the animation kind of thing. But I need to take drama classes. I've not done that yet.
Why acting? So when you think about your life after football, some people think about being a pundit or a manager or a coach, whatever. You're thinking acting.
Yeah.
How come?
I just love films, man. I've always been a big film lover. And, you know, to be involved in, you know, a film or a series would be, you know, it'd be amazing. And like I say, I need to really, you know, home in on the drama side of things and, you know, learn lines. I'm really bad with lines, to be honest.
What would be your dream role? Have you got an idea in mind for what? What kind of acting? Just give me an example.
I think I'd start comedy.
Comedy?
I think I'd start comedy first. And then, you know, when you see the Interstellars and the Inceptions, them kind of roles. But that's going to take time. You're not going to be thrown in straight away. Maybe a bit part here and there, but, you know, for the future with the media company, we've got so many things, you know, in the lineup. And obviously it's based in LA, and that's where eventually, hopefully, I want to finish football.
You want to finish in America?
Yeah, I think so.
At the very centre of your documentary is the story of your mother. I found this wonderful picture. What does she mean to you?
Nah, she's everything, Mum. Like, she's been through it, Mum. She's been through it, and, you know, to see where she is today, from where she was, huge progression. So proud of her. And it can be hard because she's had depression for years and years and years. And like you say, having me probably made that worse for her. Because she couldn't probably handle, you know, being a mother at that time. But luckily we had, you know, my nan and granddad there to support us. But
what do you want for her?
I just want the best for her. I want her to see, you know, our kids grow up. I know she's so proud of me. I've, you know, how far I've come. You know, she'll still message me for a bad game or a thing like that, which is good. Same with like my granddad, same with my dad, same with my brother. But she, yeah, she's been through it, but I just want the best for her. And like I say, I want to, you know, keeping her in this lifetime long enough to, you know, see me progress, see Hope progress into the character that what she's going to turn into, because she's a character at the moment.
You're proud of her?
Mum, yeah, massively. Massively.
How come?
Just to, from sitting in bed, you know, the age that I was there, probably, or maybe a little bit older, not being social, to FaceTiming me every day and ringing me every day and, Jess, what are you doing? And have it. I love that. And I think my little sister, like, she's 14, but she's acts like she's 18. But I think she helps my mum as well a lot, which is good. Because my mum never really had someone to, like, lean on. Like, not even my nan, like, not even my granddad really that much. Like, she's not really had, like, a proper friend to lean on, you know, in times of struggle. But I think having Daisy there, you know, my little sister, you know, she's really helped my mum, and I think my mum, you know, thrives off that. And like I say, we're both daft. We're all daft. Like, we do, like, honestly, if you had a camera in our house, honestly, it's 24/7 carnage. Honestly.
I believe you. We have a closing tradition on this podcast where the last guest asks a question for the next guest without knowing who they're leaving the question for. The question that's been left for you is, what are the uncomfortable things that you banish to the shadows, which means kind of put in the shadows, which would improve your life if you integrated them? Basically means, what are the things that you put in the shadows that would improve your life if they weren't in the shadows, I guess?
So I think just to question things a little bit more, because, you know, growing up, I never do that. Like, I've been put in situations where I could question things. Like, go and ask a question. You don't actually know what I get. But I've never done that. And, you know, it's only took me over these last couple of years where, you know, I can finally, like, man up and, you know, be strong enough to ask a question. Because sometimes it can take time for, you know, a person to, you know, to grow up and, you know, be a man. But, you know, having my daughter, like, changed a lot of things. And, you know, like I say, if things don't go your way, of course I'm going to question, you know, things. But back in the day, I would never.
Well, Jesse, thank you. Thank you for so many reasons. You've given me so much joy as a Manchester United fan over the years. I've, you know, not just because of your off the field, on the field performance, but just generally the personality you've brought into the game and the happiness you bring to your game. But also the documentary you've released on Channel 4 is incredibly important, incredibly inspiring, because it's starting a new wave of conversation around players' mental health and really a call for empathy, because we never, as fans, know what's going on out off the pitch, behind the scenes. And to have a view into that puts things in perspective. It kind of turns the lights on. And when you can see that full picture, hopefully people will realize, as you've said, that you're players, you're not robots. And that even one comment or one thing happening at home can, like all of us, like the rest of us human beings, can have a really debilitating impact on us, our mental well-being and how we perform. And that's a really important conversation, one that you didn't need to start, one that you could have very easily just kept to yourself. And it's tremendously strong, contrary to popular opinion, to speak out like that, especially when you're a man, and it's not so easy to do so because of the stigma. Yeah. So thank you for that. That's incredibly important. And I'm exceptionally excited to see the next chapter of your life play out at Nottingham Forest, but then much further on beyond as you embark on a new career in a different industry. Thank you. It means a lot to me that you've come here today.
I appreciate it, Stephen.
Pleasure to meet
you. Thank you very
much. Quick word from one of our sponsors. I've got a tip for all of you that will make your virtual meeting experiences, I think, 10 times better. As some of you may know by now, BlueJeans by Verizon offers seamless, high-quality video conferencing. But the reason why I use BlueJeans versus other video conferencing tools is because of immersion. Their tools make you feel more connected to the employees or customers you're trying to engage with. And now, they're launching one of their biggest feature enhancements to impact virtual events so far called BlueJeans Studio. I actually used it the other day. I did a virtual event using the studio, which I think about 700 of you came to. TV-level production quality, all done by one person with very little technical experience on a laptop. So if you've got an event coming up and you're thinking about doing it virtually, check out BlueJeans Studio now. Let me know what you think, because I genuinely believe, I know this is an advert and I'm supposed to say this, but I genuinely believe it's the best tool I've seen for doing really immersive, simple, but high quality production virtual events.